Good afternoon and welcome to Spokane Public Radio's Northwest Arts Review, a half hour exploring the people, places, and events forming the rich arts tapestry we enjoy here in the Inland Northwest and our wider Intermountain Northwest region. I'm Jim Tevenin, pleased to be your guide on this journey. This week, Little Spokane Artist Studio Tour co-founder Gina Fruin reminds us of the history of the event and its new virtual incarnation. Ceramic artist Ginger Oaks talks with Chris Massini about her Go Art Center on Spokane's South Hill. And Nathan Weinbender reviews a new film set in the art world. The Spokane String Quartet provides our music. This is Northwest Arts Review. The Little Spokane Valley has hosted for several years an artist studio tour the last Saturday in September. For many of us, it has been an iconic marker of the change of season from summer to fall. Most recently, the quiet beauty of the Little Spokane has also offered a welcome, brief respite from the busyness of the development not far away. The physical tour is yet another victim of 2020, but happily, it has transformed to an extended virtual event beginning on the traditional day. We talked with ceramic artist and tour co-founder Gina Fruin about the history and current reality of the Little Spokane Tour.
So it's in its seventh or eighth year. I wish I could remember exactly. Initially began with a group of two or three of us who lived out here in our valley, and we were all professionally working artists and knew that a really fun thing to do in our valley, because it's so beautiful, would be to bring the public down and then let them see where we work and create our work. And then it grew from just a few of us to then inviting up to 30 artists to set their booths and wares up on our studio lawns and gardens. And it's always been the last Saturday of September, and all proceeds have always gone directly to the artists. Monies don't go towards, like, some supporting person or venue. And so each of us take home what we make in selling our work. And I think part of the pleasure for the public is not only seeing working studios, but also by being out in a setting that's not so commercial, mm-hmm. It takes a little bit of that stress away of, I'm here, I got to buy something.
Right. I will joyfully admit that it has been, for me, a real icon of this time of year. If it's fall, then it must be time for the Little Spokane Tour.
Yeah.
And there's something just going to the venues and traveling around that part of the city that and outside the city that we never get to. It's really... Mm-hmm. It's been a significant thing, as so many other things that have happened this year. This becomes a virtual item. Before we get on to that, though, maybe if you could tell us the range of artists that you began with and perhaps how the scope of that has grown.
Well, the range began basically with about five or six of us that actually lived in the little valley mm-hmm. out here. We had some painters, a garment designer, a couple potters. And then after the first year, I think, we decided I had missed seeing groups of artists that I've shown with forever that come from Missoula and from Tacoma, who I've known for 40 years because I've done the show circuits in my early years, and we all became really good friends. And I helped run Art Fest and Inland Craft Warnings, and those artists were coming to those events and participating. So I thought, well, I wonder if they'd like to come and camp out at my house and show in my studio tour. And once I invited them, then the other artists said, well, I'd like to include so-and-so and so-and-so. So it became an invitational. They have to get it kind of invited. or accepted based upon quality of work and diversity of work, because we don't want a whole show of all potters or a whole bunch of jewelers. We like to have it really diversified so that each studio space had a variety of artisans. So that if you only had time to go to one or two of the studios, you got to see a broad range of artworks rather than just, okay, this one's all the potters or this is all the painters, that kind of thing. So we spread them out and tried to make each studio unique, each studio setting unique with what was represented. I think this year there were originally going to be about 42 artists, and we had some real new fun ones coming from over in Squim, Washington, and another artist who's had a career in the Hollywood costume design industry, and she lives down in Hood River area, a really interesting lady. So we had some unique new faces this year. Our decision to shut down was not easy, but then finally it did become very easy.
Yeah.
I think actually this online show has been harder to put together than an in-person show.
Well, you've been at art and the business end of art for a very long time, so you certainly had a learning curve, but that learning curve was left back somewhere. But this is a very different kind of learning curve that you're encountering now, isn't it?
Actually, it's trying to get people to understand that it isn't going to be here. You're promoting something that they just look at real quick and they, oh, it's going to be there. And they don't read carefully enough to understand that, no, we're promoting something different. We're promoting, we're asking the patrons to go online and support this event this year in a different way. Because all these artists, we've had one, all of us, have had show after show after show cancel on us. And many of us are relying on online sales to support our studios. I help run Trackside Studio, and we haven't had a really a functioning exhibit since March. I think we just finally got a small grant to help pay for rent for that space. This whole journey has impacted so many different businesses and in different ways. As artists, we have a tendency not to, I don't know how to explain it, we don't have a tendency to promote ourselves that well. So then you start promoting yourself hard and heavy because you really need people to remember that you're still here, you're still making work, and you still need to sell it. And yet we actually have some like guilt feelings about that. Like we're invading people's privacy by promoting ourselves that heavily, but it's really become necessary.
Well, let's look on the bright side here and see what it is that's going to be coming up as of this, this coming weekend. Now, how many artists will be represented on the virtual show?
We actually have 36 artists represented this year. And we have a mix of artists who have actually beautifully created brand new online shops that they never thought that they could create and are very proud of them. And two artists who are relying on people to look at their work on their website and then email or call them. And then we have some artists who are using an Etsy site as their sales site. And some, I think, are using Instagram because we can post, they can post all their artwork on Instagram. And if you see something that you're interested in, then the artist's email is right up there on top. You can email them and ask about that specific piece. Our hope was that most of the artists had an active shop, you know, where you you hit it, it goes into a cart, and then you purchase it. And I would say that about 60% of the 36, two dozen of the 36, have that kind of a setup right now, which will make it pretty easy for the patron.
And how can art lovers access the tour?
So generally speaking, the patron can go directly to the studio tour website. That is a World Wide Web, littlespokanestudios.com. And then on that website, there's a page called Artists. And when you click on that page, each one of the artists that's participating is represented by a picture of their work. And if you click on that picture, it takes you to a page that describes their work and also has a link that links you to their sales site.
And that all opens up as of this Saturday, the traditional date when the physical tour would take place if it were happening. And how long will the tour be up?
We decided that going to this much work for most of them, that it didn't make sense to just have this open for the one day. So we've decided to let these sales, this particular site, we're going to try and promote it through the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully get some holiday sales off people's sites and their efforts by continually promoting it.
That sounds great. The gift of art is a gift that is, to use the cliche, will keep on giving just by being there and all the connections and the reminiscences that are a part of it, in addition to just the wonder of the piece itself.
Yeah, I've had people come in my home and they go, your house is so, like, and they don't know how to describe it. It's like so kind of like, and they go, and I said, there's a lot of art in it, isn't there? But or it's like if I have a row of mugs on my shelf and one of them is from a store and the rest of them are handmade, people mm-hmm. will always go to the handmade mug to drink
sure.
out of.
Sure. Yeah, something indefinably special about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yes, there is something about the Little Spokane Artist Tour for which we here at KPBX are most grateful.
Part of this whole COVID thing has been about trying to help out. As artists, we've always been grateful for what KPBX does for us as far as promoting the arts, whether it's music, theater, dance, and the visual arts. And so one of our artists volunteered to create an image of our tour. So it's like of the Little Spokane River.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it printed 16 by 20 inches by Spokane Art Supply. So we kept the printing local. They printed it on really beautiful, thick, pulpy watercolor paper. And the print almost comes off looking like a silk screen, an original silk screen. When you look at it, you'd never look at it and think that it looks like a poster.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like an art print. And then she signed each one and numbered them. And then we're selling them for $50 each. And then as all the proceeds then are going to be donated to KPBX. The link for purchasing is also on that website, littlespokanestudios.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on the artist page, it's the very first image and it's like artist poster. And if you click on it, it then lets you purchase it by PayPal or by sending us an actual mailed check.
Mm-hmm.
The price includes us mailing you the print. The artist who created the image was Victoria Brace.
Okay. A familiar name in art circles here around Spokane, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we here at KPBX are truly grateful for this gift of yours and also for the great gift that is the Little Spokane Artists Tour. Whether
thank you
in person or this year virtually. Well, Gina Froyen, thank you so much for being with us today and taking us on the tour of the tour, and we look forward to its popping up online on Saturday.
Okay, and thanks again for your support.
Again, the tour website is littlespokanestudios.com. The Burnt Orange Heresy, a new art world thriller available to rent on demand, is, according to Nathan Weinbender, just like an intriguing painting on a wall. Depending on how you squint at it, it's either an intriguing allegory about the value of art, or it's merely a silly potboiler. Here's his review.
The Burnt Orange Heresy carries itself with the classy coolness of those 1960s Euro thrillers, with beautiful people who centrally sip wine and pose for one another in airy Italian villas, and whose sense of chilly detachment will inevitably be shattered by a single instance of betrayal and violence. It certainly carries itself with the sort of pomposity you'd expect from a movie with a title like The Burnt Orange Heresy. The movie, based on a 1971 neo-noir novel by writer Charles Wilford, mostly works because of its cheap thrills befitting an airport paperback, and its twists and turns range from unexpected to ludicrous. But it also has something to say about the fickleness of the art world, and about the push and pull between artists and critics. Its sense of cool is typified by the slick posture of its star, the Danish actor Claes Bang. I first took notice of him in the surreal satire The Square, wherein he played a snooty art curator. Here, he expands his repertoire by playing a snooty art critic named James Figueras, to whom we're introduced at a symposium delivered to American tourists in Italy. Figueras shows his audience an unremarkable abstract painting, but once he explains its tragic backstory, they're overcome with emotion about its meaning. But wait, that backstory is entirely fictional, and Figueras himself painted it in an afternoon. That, he argues, is the power of the critic. That's certainly a curious notion of what criticism is supposed to be, but then deception seems to be James's M.O. After his lecture, he strikes up a conversation with an audience member named Berenice, played by Elizabeth Debicki, and they almost immediately begin an affair, and he invites her along to stay at the country estate of eccentric art collector Joseph Cassidy, played by Mick Jagger. The getaway turns out to be something of a ruse. Cassidy tells Figueras that he had befriended a man named Jerome Debney, one of the art world's great recluses, who had a storied debut exhibition back in the 70s, shortly before all of his work was destroyed. Debney has become a cult figure in the decade since, and Cassidy knows that he's working on new art. He ensnares Figueras into a scheme wherein he'll get to know Denby, convince him to see his latest paintings, and get one for Cassidy's collection. Figueras does indeed rub elbows with Debney, who's played by Donald Sutherland as if he's stepping back into the dry detachment of Hawkeye Pierce. Debney won't agree to be interviewed by Figueras, but he befriends the younger couple anyway, and he's especially entranced by Berenice, who treats him like a human being rather than a historical figure to be revered. Figueras and Debney, meanwhile, butt heads. The critic believes that a great artist depriving the world from his work is a sin. The artist's stance is that his absence from the culture is a contribution unto itself. These heady conversations are window dressing to a plot that involves lies, double crosses, mistaken identities, and arson. It's fine as far as that sort of thing goes, but the movie reverts to silly potboiler mode in its final 15 minutes, with characters making decisions that seem ridiculous until we realize that the story couldn't advance otherwise. Still, the film got me thinking about the arbitrary and nebulous value of art. The idea that the signature scribbled in the bottom right-hand corner is the only thing separating a priceless painting from a worthless piece of canvas. In that sense, maybe the film is functioning as criticism itself. Or maybe, like the very title, The Burnt Orange Heresy, it doesn't mean anything significant at all, and all you need to do is stare at it hanging on the wall, looking pretty and distant in its gilded frame. For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Nathan Weinbender.
Nathan Weinbender is the film and music editor for The Inlander and a film critic on Spokane Public Radio's Movies 101, heard 6:30 Friday evenings on KPBX and Saturdays at 1 on KSFC.
For Spokane Public Radio, I'm Chris Massini. My guest today is Ginger Oaks, owner of the Go Art Center, a ceramic studio on Spokane's South Hill. Earlier this year, she received a Spokane Arts Grant Award to help reopen her studio to the public after a health-related closure. I started our conversation by asking Ginger to share how the Go Arts Center got its start.
So to introduce myself, I'm Ginger Oaks. I've been using clay as my medium for going on 30 years now, and it has been a wonderful insight for me of how to relax and how to tactile kind of help me get through stressful times. And so when I started doing that years and years ago, I've been doing it by myself, sometimes on a kitchen table and sometimes in a spare room, until about 12 years ago when I had moved to Spokane and we bought a home, I decided to turn the garage into my studio. At that point, I just was working by myself, and until 2016, had some lifestyle changes and ended up going to an entrepreneur class in early 2017. And they kind of helped me form a business plan to make my studio into Go Art Center. So Go Art Center was really kind of formed out of my class at the community college to do what I am doing for myself, to help people learn to relax and play with clay. And for about a year and a half, I had 500 people come to my studio, and it was just the most wonderful experience for me. I found out that there are just lots and lots of people who need to be able to play. And then I fell ill and had some hospitalization. And just because my business was set up to basically self-sustain itself, you know, to, you know, people who came were putting in money to buy the clay and their glaze. And that's basically all it was. It wasn't like I was charging a large amount for them to be here. They were part of my inspiration as much as I was theirs. And so when I fell ill, I wasn't able to get going again. It took me a while to recuperate. And when I did, I realized that starting up again was going to be a real challenge. I've been having eyesight problems, that my eyesight has been diminishing for a while. So I knew that I needed help with things like social media and computer screens and stuff like that. And I needed help with somebody to check out my kiln and make sure that it was going to make it through if I was still going to share. All of that kind of stuff I wasn't prepared for after I fell ill. And I needed to have some financial assistance or I wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah.
So that's when I applied with Spokane Arts.
Yeah. So you applied for a SAGA grant for this year. And so tell us about what type of funding you're applying for and how that funding is going to help you.
I applied for it at the beginning of 2020, right? You know, the first round of the SAGA grants. And thankfully, I had assistance from Shelley Winecoop and the Spokane Arts Group. Melissa and everybody over there were very accommodating to the fact that I couldn't see well. And so I had a lot of hands-on help in getting my grant application in. But it was basically just to be able to reopen my studio. And if I reopened my studio, then I could share it with Spokane. Well, you know, the fates came down and ta-da, on April 1st, I got a phone call that I had been granted the funding for that application that I did. And suddenly I was going to be able to get my kiln repaired and do all of those safety equipment kind of things and whatnot and invite people back in my studio. Well, duh. It was perfect timing, right in time for the lockdown.
Yeah. So obviously you applied for the grant in a very different time, you know, in January when, yes, you know, we weren't dealing with a pandemic. So how has that changed your ability to reopen and bring people into the studio?
Oh, when I got the word that I had received it, I pretty much kind of went into a state of shock and limbo because I couldn't figure out how in the world I could share with everything in lockdown. And so then I somehow had a dream of, well, of course, I'll just do curbside pickup like everybody else. And so I figured out a plan where I could put a ball of clay in a bucket and some tools and some instructions and then do virtual Zoom meetings with everybody on a private lesson basis. And that was awesome. I said, oh, I can do that. That's something I can do. And then I realized, no, heck, people don't have disposable income right now. They're not even going to go for that. They, you know, they can't afford a disposable income. But at the same time, this is the time when they really need to relax and play. I just said, I'll just buck up and do the best I can. And I will cut my expenses down to where I can cut people's cost of doing the project in half. And so I started with the first clay to go on the 6th of June, and I promoted it with, you know, a lot of extra kinds of advertising and whatnot, and I have had really good response, and really have enjoyed it and appreciated and learned. So I feel like, you know, that's the mission.
So, you know, now a few months on from your Saga Award, how, if people are interested in playing and relaxing with clay, what are the options for them now at the Go Art Center?
At this time, what I'm doing is I have on my website, which is www.goartstudio.com, set up for, it's called Fall into Fall. People can go there and they'll see the projects that are happening for September, October, November. And the September project is pretty much at its end now. It's in the completion stage since we're past the halfway point. And in October, the project will be made during the month and be ready for the 1st of November so that the holiday parties will start. And it's things that they can use with dinnerware. And in November, they'll be doing a project that will be things they can do for, you know, the Christmas gingerbread trays and ornaments and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what people are doing right now. And it's been very gratifying for me, but it really humbling when I realized that, you know, I don't have anything to give to help people right now except this. And I'm so thankful, so very thankful that I have it.
Well, Ginger Oaks is the owner of the Go Art Studio in Spokane, recipient of a Saga Award. You can find out more information about the studio and upcoming classes and workshops at goartstudio.com. Ginger, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Chris. It's awesome.
Thanks for listening to Northwest Arts Review. I'm Jim Tevenin. Our thanks today to Chris Messini, also Gina Fruin, Ginger Oaks, Nathan Weinbender, and, of course, the Spokane String Quartet, who take us out with a bit more Beethoven. Join us again next week for another Northwest Arts Review.